Welcome to this week's edition of Local Motion. I'm Kate Redmond. The Grizzly Creek fire last summer in and around Glenwood Canyon impacted the Colorado River and Interstate 70, the major east-west thoroughfare of western Colorado. I spoke with Dave Kanzer, known as DK, of the Colorado River District about how a burn scar alters a river for years to come. My first interview occurred last Thursday, just prior to a weekend of rain. Many of his remarks were anticipatory. I got to circle back with him after the deluge and also speak with Elise Thatcher of the Colorado Department of Transportation, who dealt with not one but two mudslides that disrupted that major artery when they were forced to close the highway for hours at a time to clean up. Thank you for joining me. First, let's hear from DK, who is the Director of Science and Interstate Matters for the Colorado River Conservation District, on some of the science of forest fire impacts on river water. Because the Grizzly Creek fire burned in such steep terrain, are we seeing a great sediment loss in and around Glenwood Canyon into the Colorado River?
We do anticipate the potential for increased sedimentation. Thus far, Mother Nature has been somewhat kind and hasn't unleashed torrents of rain associated with a monsoonal flow. So to date, we have not seen that, but we are preparing for that potential. And by preparing for, we're setting out monitors for precipitation. We have enhanced precipitation network to help the Weather Service predict events that could cause increased sedimentation. And then also in the river itself, we have deployed, along with USGS, additional monitors and sampling events to try to get at that very question about how much sedimentation is potentially increasing due to these fire scars, these burn scars. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of acres burned in the Colorado River Basin. So it's very much tied into the geology, the slope, and the aspect of the terrain, as you point out. And because of those factors in Glenwood Canyon in particular, we do anticipate the potential for increased sedimentation and even some debris flows where you can mobilize not only soil but rocks and burned vegetation.
So you didn't see any of that sedimentation come down with the snowmelt runoff?
To date, we have seen some increases in turbidity and suspended sediment concentration, but we haven't seen any large events. This year, looking back, the snowpack was below average across the basin, and in particular in this band of elevations in Glenwood Canyon, between essentially 6 and 9,000 feet, was particularly dry. So we didn't have a whole lot of extended runoff, but it should be noted that we are monitoring the tributaries, in particular No Name Creek and Grizzly Creek, and those are the areas that had the most severe burn areas, and those creeks and watersheds are being sampled in a very strategic way to try to look at any increases in chemical parameters that could affect the environment.
A river needs nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium for plankton and algae growth, but excess amounts can cause algae blooms. Are we seeing that because of the ash from the fire?
You know, to date, we have not. We're fortunate we have not seen any algal blooms in the Colorado River. Now, we are seeing, due to climate change and other basins, where algae is increasing, generally speaking, even in the absence of ash and other nutrient inputs. But here again, in the Colorado River main stem, in and around Glenwood Springs, where the Colorado River District is based, we're not seeing those spikes or changes, you know, significant changes yet. But we are sampling for these parameters, trying to understand the nutrient cycle and the inputs, and how this has the potential to impact the ecology of the river.
I was interested to learn that even though the removal of plant material debris might be beneficial for culverts and bridges, it might be better for the ecosystem to leave it. Can you talk about that?
You know, I'm not an expert in restoration, but from what I've learned, you're right. We want to sequester the carbon that has been burned, the vegetation. It does play a good role potentially in recovery, but I think the challenge, of course, is to keep it in place in the face of some of these thunderstorms that can roll through, especially during summer, late afternoon thunderstorms can strip out and move a large amount of material. So some of the restoration concepts are to actually put up small dams or obstructions to slow the flow of these runoff events from thunderstorms and to detain some of that material. So that's good not only for the recovery of the local flora, but also, as you say, keeps it out of the culverts. We don't want to have flooding due to plugged up culverts,
which we are expecting this week.
That's right. And today we're on high alert for some of these events in Glenwood Canyon. Nobody wants to have people caught between the subwatersheds where you could have debris blocking the road or the path, or heaven forbid, somebody getting caught up in a flood event directly. So that's really the near-term impacts. The longer-term impacts to the river health and ecology, also very much on the mind of the Colorado River District as we're planning to protect our water users, whether they're municipalities or agricultural users. And also, I should point out, recreational users. We don't only have the bikers and the hikers. We have a very large community of, you know, private and commercial rafting that takes place in Glenwood Canyon. Those can also be impacted. Again, very, very important for us to communicate, collect the data, and share it with the public.
It's pretty profound that here we are almost a year after the Grizzly Creek fire, and this is the first real water event that we're looking at potentially in the canyon.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's good news, bad news situation. It's been dry, which leads to wildfire events and low soil moisture conditions. Obviously, we don't want that, but we also have been blessed, if you will, without having large rainfall events or even these snowfall events that could move this material. So it's helping in the recovery. The slower that we can apply water, the better. We're watching the skies and what Mother Nature does. But it is unique that it's been such a dry 2 years now. In fact, we are breaking records across the West for drought and below average annual precipitation. And the forecast is not favorable either. In other words, typically in the summer, we would get and anticipate plumes of moisture coming up from the Gulf of California. Right now, the models and the forecasts are for a below-average monsoonal flow, where the movement of moisture may not be as beneficial for water supplies, but again, may be beneficial to the recovery of these burn scars.
Can we go back a little bit and talk about the effects of the burn scar on the temperature of the river and perhaps also the pH and the turbidity?
Sure. Yeah, these parameters are being monitored in channel every day. We now have additional, what we call continuous monitors, upstream and downstream of the burn area. And this is thanks to the United States Geological Survey and a local group called the Middle Colorado Watershed Council, along with the Colorado River District, work together to deploy these continuous monitors that, as I say, in real time, measure the changes above and below the burn area. That includes temperature, specific conductivity, pH, turbidity, and dissolved oxygen. So those five parameters we can watch change not only daily, monthly, seasonally, but in response to these burn events. We do anticipate, unfortunately, that during some of these storm events, that turbidity will increase, that dissolved oxygen may decrease. pH may respond again to the ash or input of burn materials, as well as the specific conductivity, which is really what we call a surrogate for salinity. And so salinity is a real important parameter for us, water quality parameter for drinking water. And we're trying to protect, you know, a lot of the municipalities like Rifle, Colorado, take their water right off the river. So as these parameters change and they look upstream in real time, they can see potentially a plug or some impacts coming downstream to them. They can, through this monitoring network, be alerted automatically and then proactively turn off their intakes for a period of time to allow that plume of impacted water to go by. So that's a really key improvement that we're doing in our monitoring network, along with that precipitation monitoring network that we're also beefing up to try to connect the precipitation and weather events to the erosion and movement of what we call mass wasting of materials and where the ultimate fate and transport of those materials go. And certainly in a river system like the Colorado, where 40 million people in two countries, seven states rely on it, I mean, this is, you know, everything. This is something that we're all hands on deck trying to understand and provide that information to the critical users. And we're not just talking about human users, right? You were talking about the environmental and ecological impacts. We want to understand if there's a way to mitigate some of these events. And typically in a year, when you have some stored water upstream in our reservoirs, we can increase for a short amount of time flows to flush out some of the materials that could accumulate in flow water along the margins and in some of the habitat areas that fish rely upon. So it's a multi-year effort, really, and we're just at the beginning. What we're learning here will pay dividends over time. And in fact, when I talk to other experts about, you know, and I'm not a fire expert by any means, I'm a water quality, water quantity, water resource person, they tell me that sometimes these impacts can be delayed for several years, and it's going to take, you know, decades really for full restoration to occur. So the database that we're building today, we can go back and compare and watch how things are changing and then how we can hopefully mitigate and adapt to, and maybe come up with some, as I say, water management techniques to offset some of the adverse impacts.
How many monitors do you have in the river from, say, Glenwood Canyon to Grand Junction?
So we have quite a few right now in terms of the ones that I mentioned, but I have five different parameters. Mm-hmm. We have from Dot Cero, we have one. Glenwood Canyon, we have another. As we go downstream, at Cameo, which is near Grand Junction, there's another, and then the state line. So there's four that have these five-parameter continuous monitors, and then upstream there's a few, and then in between there are some that have just temperature and specific conductivity. We are supplementing these with direct sampling that go to the lab, and all the wet chemistry is analyzed about at least quarterly, if not on a higher frequency, up and down the river as well, in the impacted and in the non-impacted areas. So what's key about the non-impacted areas, we want to compare, again, burn areas versus unburned areas, so we can segregate the signal or the imprint of an influence of the fire. So that's happening as well through this coalition that includes multiple agencies, volunteers, and nonprofits to really get at increasing the science, the hydrologic and the fire science.
Yeah, huge effort. I was also interested in how the changes in a river depend in part on the bedrock. For example, stream response to the 2002 Hayman fire was greater in areas that are underlaid by granite and so have lower acid neutralizing capacity. Contrast this with the 2003 fire in Glacier National Park, which didn't really show extreme chemistry response because the bedrock is carbonate.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, the chemistry plays a part, and so does the burn severity. When you have burn severities that are severe, you can actually have a situation where the material becomes hydrophobic. In other words, the water doesn't interact with the geology, or it moves quicker because the whole character of the material changes under high heat. That played into the Hayman, that played into some of the other fires that I think you're referring to. For us, we have quite a diverse geological environment that we're looking at. In Glenwood Canyon, we're talking about quartzites, we're talking about bedrocks that are pretty old, pretty hard, but on top of it, we have a thin veneer of colluvium, we call it, which is basically eroded rock that has accumulated. And so when those materials get baked and under great heat, they can change, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they can give off in different areas different chemical signals. In some areas outside of Glenwood Canyon, down near Roan Creek, where the Pine Gulch fire burned, that's all in shale, marine shale, and that's where salinity concerns really crop up. You can get a whole lot of what we call major ions, cations, anions, moving to the river, which really are hard to deal with for drinking water suppliers. So you're right, it's all site-specific, how these fires, not only the geology, but also the vegetation, that leads to, again, the burn severity. And there's been some very good work done. The Burned Area Emergency Response Team, BEAR, has mapped quite a bit of these areas for burn severity, and these are what are being used to power and feed into the models, which determine different thresholds for either closure of, you know, access points to make sure health and human safety is preserved, and situations like that, to really try to forecast when we have an event coming, what kind of response might we see.
Can you say a little bit more about temperature, about the temperature changes of the river due to the burn scar?
Yeah. So the temperatures typically fluctuate pretty dramatically seasonally and annually. Of course, when the snowmelt is finished, temperatures rise naturally. And the vegetation help prevent radiative heating. When we strip off any vegetation due to the burning, you will get a lot more heating. So that kind of situation can be compounded in a year like this, where we have low stream conditions due to drought. So it's a double whammy, where you have more lands exposed to solar input and heating, and then you also have lower flows, which can heat up, you know, the river heats up faster.
If you're just joining me, that was Dave Kanzer, or DK, from the Colorado River District, talking about the effects on the Colorado River from area forest fires. We spoke last Thursday as his and other organizations braced for heavy rains over the weekend. CDOT was moving fast to mitigate the effects on transportation. On Monday, I got to speak with Elise Thatcher, who is the Northwest Colorado Communications Manager for the Colorado Department of Transportation, on the preparations in Glenwood Canyon and the response when they were tasked with cleaning up two mudslides. That rain on Thursday was pretty extreme. I happened to be driving west on I-70 through Glenwood Canyon, and that burn scar was forward in my mind. Can you tell our listeners how CDOT prepared for the storm?
For several months, we've been coordinating with local stakeholders on a safety closure protocol. Really what that means is having a series of steps immediately handy whenever there is a flash flood watch, a flash flood warning. Whenever we need to evacuate the canyon, it's the hardest to move and find folks who are out of their cars. They might be out recreating on the path. They might be getting ready to get in or out of the river at the boat ramp, or they might be using the restroom. And they're just a lot harder to track down and get them into their vehicles and evacuate them when they're out and about. So if we have a certain amount of rain in the forecast for the next day, even though it's not formally a flash flood watch or flash flood warning, we'll close the rest areas and the bike path so that we have people not lingering in the canyon. You know, everybody's in their cars on I-70. And then that way we can evacuate the canyon as quickly as possible.
And this was the first so-called water event that has been on the burn scar since the fire last summer, since our snowmelt runoff was negligible. Did CDOT dodge a bullet this spring?
It has been a pretty dry spring. So what we are noting is that, yes, this is when more rainfall or precipitation has come down on the burn scar. And we're seeing what that means when enough rain comes down in certain areas in the canyon. So we didn't see this earlier this year, correct, because there just wasn't as much precipitation in a short amount of time. So as we move forward, we'll keep taking into account how much debris flow comes down, how much rain it takes to bring that down. We'll be working with NOAA and forecasts and working with other organizations with rain gauges in the canyon, getting a sense for the precipitation coming down, and keeping that in mind as we move forward and keep refining our safety protocol.
That was going to be my next question, is what entities are CDOT working with to keep that hillside in place and keep commuters safe?
So in terms of the literal landscape up above the interstate, most of it is Forest Service land. So we're staying in touch with them. Because it's so steep, in most of those areas, it's not really possible to prevent rock fall or mud flow or dirt coming down in a debris flow. There's a lot of areas, as many folks know, where we do rock fall prevention. But in these particular areas where it's more of a gully or a drainage, it's harder for the Forest Service or CDOT to just put up nets and try and keep that from coming down. So that means that we're really working with local stakeholders more on the response rather than a prevention, hence the safety protocol that I mentioned. Now, there are areas immediately next to the roadway where there is the Grizzly Creek burn scar. And so So we have put down mulch and seeding in those areas that are right within what we call the CDOT right-of-way to help prevent mud flows immediately next to the roadway.
The debris field was reported between 6 and 10 feet deep and 70 feet wide. How in the world did your crews clean that up?
So, yes, those dimensions were for the Saturday event, that's June 26th, and then for the flow that came down on Sunday, June 27th, the size was around 80 to 100 feet in terms of width, and then about 5 to 7 feet deep. You moved that material, which really was described as soupy by a lot of our folks who were out clearing it. You move it with heavy equipment, and we had a coordination of equipment on Sunday night where we were able to use certain pieces of equipment with each other so that we were maximizing each load that we were carrying out. So we ended up being more efficient during that night work than we had anticipated, which was great for helping us move along and reopen the interstate on Monday.
No injuries or trapped vehicles have been reported. That, to me, seems miraculous. It's a long stretch of highway.
Yes, and I would say also a testament to the level of awareness that many of our drivers have going through the canyon. I think a lot of folks did see the debris come down, especially on Sunday, and they did a great job of making sure that they didn't end up accidentally in the mud flow. We did have a motorcyclist who was in part of one of the flows, but there was no injury. So I will say that was a little bit of luck, but also people on the road really paying close attention to what was going on around them.
The alternate route on your website is up through Steamboat and around through Meeker and down to Rifle. Your website explicitly says do not use Cottonwood Pass as a detour. Can you tell our listeners why that's a bad idea?
Yes. Eagle County is managing Cottonwood Pass, and they have consistently alerted drivers that the road is just too rough to have significant amount of traffic traveling over, and especially it's not ready or designed, I should say, for heavy commercial traffic. That means bigger trucks. It's just not a good route for folks who are not comfortable driving in mountainous roads that are unpaved. And there's really not great cell service in that area. So if you do end up having a problem, you create problems for everybody else because it's harder to get emergency responders up there. And it ends up having this domino effect, which then has an even greater effect if there's detour traffic up there that the road is not designed for. So we strongly recommend that drivers not use Cottonwood Pass. I should mention it is also for emergencies that local agencies are responding to and assisting residents with. So it's really important to make sure Cottonwood Pass is clear of additional detour traffic because it's an essential option for emergency services getting from Eagle County to the Roaring Fork Valley and then back again if that's necessary. This is going to be an ongoing requirement for closures, and it's really just because we're doing everything we can to keep motorists safe. We know that it's probably going to feel tiresome after a while, and that's understandable. But at the end of the day, making sure that this canyon is safe means that everybody can go home and nobody gets injured. That's our mission.
That was Elise Thatcher of the Colorado Department of Transportation talking about the ongoing situation in western Colorado's Glenwood Canyon. The area suffered a forest fire last summer that burned over 32,000 acres, much of it in steep terrain above the canyon. The interstate, the train, a bike path, and the Colorado River run the 16-mile length of the narrow canyon. The Colorado River District monitors the river and its tributaries and uses water events like last weekend's deluge to study the physical and chemical changes to the river by intense and prolonged fire. They and their partners provide information to municipalities, land management groups, and the public. I was fortunate to be able to speak with Dave Kanzer a second time after the weekend. When I spoke with you on Thursday, you were anticipating the first water event after the Grizzly Creek fire since that fire last summer. Now your real work begins, yeah?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a challenge to try to not only anticipate these events, but then to react to them. We've got, besides the transportation infrastructure, which was heavily impacted, now we have water quality impacts in the river. Luckily, we have quite a bit of dilution and we're doing okay right now. Those that divert and directly use water out of the river are being adversely impacted. And in fact, Glenwood Springs is on water restrictions right now because of these events. The city of Glenwood takes water from Grizzly and No Name Creeks up high, some of the highest and best water quality that we have, and it requires very little treatment. However, when those diversions get adversely impacted, they turn those off and they have to turn to another water source, which is the Roaring Fork River. So that water requires quite a bit of different treatment and quite a bit of, shall we say, different types of infrastructure to utilize. And so right now, switching over from their water supplies requires use of their existing storage, which is not that great, and causing essentially a short-term shortage of water. So that's an example of these direct impacts of these mud flow and precipitation events.
And how about the communities further down the river?
Thus far, I haven't heard any direct impacts, but it's a very similar situation where it takes additional treatment, settling, and in fact, what they probably do is let this, I'll say, bad water go by, utilize the storage that they have in system, and then hopefully as things clear up, they can resume their normal operations. But we are anticipating several more events this week. The forecasts actually now have turned wet. Conditions have changed rapidly in the system and in the watershed. So we're anticipating several more events this week up and down the river. In fact, maybe further upriver where the East Troublesome Fire and Burn Scar are located. So we're gearing up for yet another event. It may not directly impact Grizzly Creek and Glenwood Canyon, but it could and probably will affect the watershed and Colorado River water quality and quantity.
Did I hear you correctly when you said there is a dilution process going on with the processing of the water?
So the natural dilution is what I was referring to. And with these events, if and when it reaches the river and can mix and settle within the natural river channel, that's a what I would call a natural dilution or natural treatment effect. So time heals all things, so to speak. And with time, the river will essentially clean itself of some of these, say, natural contaminants.
The rain was expected and prepared for not only by folks like you who work with the Colorado River, but also CDOT. But was there anything that surprised you about what happened this weekend?
It's always surprising how quickly things can change. You know, we went from dry to wet. We went from no impacts to very significant impacts in really a very short amount of time. When I look back at the warnings, the flash flood warning occurred probably 15 or 20 minutes before the actual mud flow and the closure of the road. It's both expected and unexpected how quickly things can change. The internet is an amazing source of information for those traveling. Also, all of the USGS data that we've talked about previously are online, and we can see these events as they move through the system. For any water diverters, any water users, they should consult the internet and the USGS pages to look for these slugs, these pulses of water, so that they can understand how the system is operating. Right now, we have seen the first of these pulses move all the way through the system into Utah, and it's really an amazing set of technology that we have now developed for all the public to utilize and to be aware of at USGS.gov. It is sort of a fact of life for those of us who live in the mountains. It's a testament to, I'll say, Mother Nature, how powerful she is.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Local Motion dealing with the Grizzly Creek Fire Burn Scar. As climate disruption continues to occur on a global scale, very important science is happening right here in western Colorado. The Colorado River Conservation District, located in Glenwood Springs, for which DK is the Director of Science and Interstate Matters, emphasized the many partnerships at the state and federal level that make their work possible. The Forest Service, the BLM, Fish and Wildlife, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, the Middle Colorado Watershed Council, CDOT, and the Colorado Water Conservation Board all work together on river health. I've provided links to their websites right here on KVNF's website. For KVNF, I'm Kate Redmond.